Welcome to Gen X and Gen Z in Dialogue, a podcast about generations, leadership, and communication. In this podcast, different perspectives come together. The experience of Gen X, the new ways of thinking of Gen Z, and of course, the experience of our guests. We talk about leadership, communication, and the challenges and opportunities that arise when different generations meet. Each episode also includes unique topics brought in by our guests based on their personal and professional experience. Before we dive into today's episode, we'd like to briefly reflect on our last conversation. In that episode, we discussed the generational topic, leadership, communication, and of course, coaching with Sara Lee Alcaraz. One key takeaway was Sara Lee stressing the importance of empathy, vulnerability, and humanity in leadership, particularly in the context of AI integration in the workplace. Today, we're especially excited to welcome our guest, Terence Clark. We'll be talking about all the topics already mentioned before, his experiences and his insights and knowledge in terms of working with global leaders and leadership teams. Terence himself is the executive coach for Reset Global Leaders and leadership teams, and he especially focuses on cross-cultural friction, unclear influence, and uneven leadership capacity. Welcome, Terence. Thank you for joining us today on our podcast. Before we start with the questions, I would like you to introduce yourself to the listeners so that they can get to know you better, and then we will start with the dialogue.
Great, okay, thank you. So very happy to be here. Very happy to be invited. Thank you so much. So as Rebecca said, my name's Terence. I'm usually originally from Ireland. Then I went to the UK. Then I came to Hong Kong. Then I came to China. And now I live between Shanghai and Kazakhstan for business. Executive coach, ICF PCC, master coach from ITD World. I think I've got 5,000 plus hours now of coaching. Also training as well. So as you say, specializing in the cultural aspect of things and communication. That's all I have really to say about myself. We can learn more as we go into the dialogue.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. To start talking about the topic, I would just ask you the first question that I ask everyone on this podcast, which is about your experiences with the younger but also the older generations, and not only now, but also when you were younger. If there's anything that stood out to you, anything that made an impression on you, just tell us about that in general.
It's a really interesting question because I will be 48 years old this month, and I grew up for the first 8 years of my life in Northern Ireland. So the older generation didn't talk to you; they told you what to do. Mm-hmm. So we didn't talk about things. We didn't talk about sort of feelings. There wasn't much communication. Pretty much the same as well. We went to live in the UK as well. I went to the UK when I was 8, so pretty much the same. You know, you're told what to do. You're also pretty much left to your own devices. You know, you go and explore things. You go and play all day. You come back when the sun goes down, type of thing. And obviously, the world is a different place now, so you can't really go out and play all day like this. But I think the biggest difference when I was growing up was communication, because it just didn't exist culturally, right? So particularly in Ireland and the UK, didn't really communicate any sort of communication. And the difference now is, it's a tough one, right? It's from a cultural point of view. Different cultures have different ways of communicating, of course, direct and indirect. But I think now what I'm seeing, because I work with teens, I work with people just coming out of university into their first jobs, as well as executives. So all the executives I sort of work with are around my age, and they have real trouble communicating with the next generation, because I'm not saying what's right or wrong, but the work ethic is very much different. The idea of work-life balance is very different as well. And, you know, direct and indirect communication has changed as well, where you've got to be very, very careful of what you say nowadays, because everything can be taken the wrong way. So those are the big differences, from being very direct to now being very careful of how you communicate, and expectations in the workforce, and expectations of how, not necessarily parenting, because that's all different, but expectations of just how parents and teens communicate with each other. But the big thing we're seeing is A huge lack of being able to concentrate and focus. It's because of TikTok, it's because of Instagram, it's because of the endless scroll, Actually, the guy that invented the endless scroll apologized for it recently. He said it's the worst thing he's ever done, the endless scroll, because it takes away focus. So one of our programs that we'll talk about a little bit later in the podcast is around helping people to communicate, particularly now. It's very tough. And here in China, it's like everything is like instant communication, instant. So before we started this, I've turned off all my notifications, like literally everything, because people want to reply on WeChat immediately. They want to reply to an email immediately. They want to reply to whatever you're doing right away. And that's the speed of things. So it's very hard to focus because you're being pulled in many, many directions. So overall, communication does change between generations, but I think in the last sort of the la like sort of last generation, what are we on now? We're on Gen Z. Is it Gen Z now? It's
Gen
Generation
Alpha.
Alpha. Kids this year are Generation Alpha, right? So they actually said that the Gen Z is the first generation to underperform their parents' generation in history. So normally, in terms of results and grades and things like this, they outperform. But the theory now is that it's just this lack of attention, and COVID also didn't help, right? So taking away those people skills, taking away, having to get up at 9 and go to work and finish at 5 or 6 and come home, it's all changed. And it's neither good nor bad. It's just something we have to be aware of. So before I talk for 20 minutes on that one question, I'll go back to you, Rebecca.
Wanted to kind of ask more detail about what you said, that you when you were younger, there was not a lot of communication or like none at all. How did you deal with when you moved and you noticed that there is a different approach on communication? How did you learn to communicate when you were like never really taught how to do that, and how was that for you?
I couldn't really pinpoint that. It's a very good question. I think, you adapt to where you live. You adapt to where your environment, right? So I have a model that I developed. So as Gerhard did as well with the master coach, we had to develop our own model, coaching model. And my model was called, it's called the AAA model. So it came from cross culture, but it can be applied to everything. And it's literally 3 A's. So it's awareness, appreciation, adaptation. So wherever you are, first of all, you have to be aware that things are different. Then appreciate that things are different. Just because it's different doesn't mean it's wrong. And then adapt yourself. So, I work all over Southeast Asia, and I now work in Central Asia, in Kazakhstan as well. And it's constant adaptation, constant different ways of communication. Being more direct, being more indirect. So I just think of just living overseas for nearly all my adult life has just changed the way you communicate without thinking about it. I think you just do, because when you live somewhere, you do change, even if you don't realize it. You have to.
I think that's a very good answer. And I wanted to also ask a bit about because you are leading leadership teams and you are doing coaching, there's like any the changes that happen with the different generations, if you can also if you also notice them when coaching someone, and also maybe in the cross-culture context, because you are focusing on that. At least I saw that on your LinkedIn profile. If there's anything you can also observe.
Well, it's things are changing very, very fast now. Very, very fast. I mean, particularly in the last 3 or 4 years with what's happening with AI. So there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of ambiguity. So what's going to happen? I was coaching somebody yesterday who actually works for one of the very big publicly listed tech firms. And when they would do a goal or an OKR for the year, or even for 6 months, it's gone now. Like, so Anthropic, Claude, releases something on Friday, and then their whole Monday is, how do we keep up with this? What do we do? How do we change? So we can't go from sort of predictability anymore. We have to sort of go to a way of just being more agile. And so there's a lot of people are very anxious, right? There's layoffs every day. Older people, not everyone, but they're struggling to keep up with the changes. They're told to go and learn this, go and learn that. And you're leading a very much more tech savvy generation who grew up with all of these things. It's like the example I give is like my dad didn't know how to, and Rebecca, you might not even know what this is, but my dad couldn't program the VCR. So we used to have a VCR, then came DVD. I don't know if you do you know what a DVD is, Rebecca? Please tell
Yeah,
me
of
if you know what a
course.
DVD is. Right, okay.
Yeah.
So the VCR was before the DVD.
Okay.
And as a kid, you were able to work, make it work, and then your parents couldn't. And it's like when iPads came out, it's so each generation sort of adapts quicker to things. I find that people feel like they're stuck. They're leading a team, and suddenly there's all of this tech involved in it, and more tools and more online meetings, and we're more connected than ever, but we're more disconnected than ever, if you know what I mean. So that's a big phenomenon we have here in Asia on a video call. It's the black box syndrome. Nobody turns the videos on, right? It was a big chat. I was even doing a workshop last week for a it was for Thailand, Malaysia, sorry, 2 weeks ago, Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, China, and Vietnam, and literally nobody wanted to turn the cameras on for all these different people. And actually, the global HR person was there and said, "You have to turn your cameras on. You have to, right? So how do we communicate? So we have all these great tools, but now we don't want to communicate. I'll give you an example, Rebecca. When mobile phones first came out, call me, call me, call me. I've got a phone, and now it's like, please don't call me, text me, right? Or message me. We're losing communication, and that's what I'm seeing in doesn't matter which culture, we're losing the way to communicate. And it's leading to more problems. People might read the way you've written something wrong. You might not be quick enough to reply to them. So yeah, throughout generations it's really changing. And AI is a big challenge now. It's a big challenge. So we're a lot of coaching conversations is how do I lead in this age of AI? How do I adapt myself? And it's this is the fast I think one of the fastest changes in history. Other things have been quite quick. Going from the farm to the factory was I don't know actually the exact, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's like a couple of 100 years maybe, right? And then going from horses to motor cars took a while as well. Going from gas light to electric light as well. And I'm remembering these because when this happened, there was huge riots, there was huge fights. Right? Even in New York, there was like lots of horse stables, and there was like fighting about cars coming in because it was people's livelihood. So it's constant change, and the world is so ambiguous now that I think people are stressed. Like, am I even going to have a job tomorrow? That's the main question with people. Microsoft just laid off, was it 1,000 people, all around the $200,000 mark? So they weren't like junior people. Basically, they're replacing them. So that's where a lot of it's coming now is how do I plan for the future? Never mind, just how do I communicate? That's the big thing.
I wanted to dive deeper in this topic of communication, but Dad, if you want to ask a question or something now, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm also here with these two wonderful people, and you said something which I remember, and it was something I was thinking about it, and I think you said the Gen Z is the first generation underperforming as the generation of their parents. Can you give a little bit of context to this? Because this is very interesting, I think, also for our listeners.
Well, it's if I'm remembering correctly, because I read this just recently. It was around sort of grades at school, around ambition, around having communication skills, and wanting to go and work, and even like being able to buy a house, right? It's not just for Gen Z. It's very hard for everyone now, right? So all these things where you would have a house and car and family and all these things, there's lots of metrics in it. But they're sort of saying now, due to COVID, it's sort of like a lost generation for those years in terms of communication skills. People, they don't want to come into an office to work. They want to. This is not everyone, of course. That's generalization, right? But I was talking, well, coaching a client recently, and he's in his 50s, and his whole marketing team are Gen Z, and he can't understand why they want to leave at exactly 5 o'clock when there's things to do, and they have marketing events every week, and they need someone to be there, but they're just saying, well, my contract says 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, so that's what I'm going to do. And he cannot understand, right, why they don't have the same work ethic. And where he was like brought up by his parents, who'd sort of just after the war and all this, his grandparents and his parents, just after the war, well, you had to work really hard. You had to, right? And nowadays, everything's online. It's more, feels simpler to do things. There's not as much pressure to make money. So he's really struggling with how to communicate with them, because actually someone needs to be there on the weekend to make sure the event's going well, right? But he's in Kazakhstan, so the labor law is very strict, right? So it's 9 to 5. You cannot put in the contract, if you work extra hours, you'll get more time off. But that's what most, so the older people will work more hours and then take more holiday. But the younger generation are saying, it's 9 to 5. And I won't reply to you after 5 o'clock, which means things don't get done. And that's very strange. Someone like me, so I've been in China 22, 23 years now. And at China speed, we're never off, right? I mean, it can be exhausting sometimes, It's so strange. Like, for example, now we're on a week-long holiday. No one's contacting. And I'm like, what's going on? And tomorrow will be the first day back. I will have so many messages and emails from people. But it's like, I'm so used to working at that speed here. It's very odd for me not to, if someone messages me at 10 o'clock, I'll reply, generally, So there's a change in like work-life balance, thoughts of interpretation of things, of what actually going above and beyond for work is. And it's different in different cultures, right? But I mean, we have a horrible culture here in China, Zhou Zhou Liao, 996. It basically means you're working all day, every day, right? And it's in a lot of the tech companies. And the labor law here is very strict as well, but you see people getting edged out of work at around 35 years old. So 35 years old is considered old in the tech world here. Yeah, which is not right. But what happens is, because of this really grueling, grueling working hours, really exhausting, they think, well, young people will do it. They'll take more, I don't want to swear, they'll take more BS from the boss, right? And they don't have families to go home to. They're not married yet. They don't have to worry about kids. And probably around 35, you've got kids, and you've got all this other stuff. So you get edged out, really. And it's not because you don't know as much about the tech, because everyone's learning as well. So it's a very, big pressure on people, and the way of work has changed. And it's going to change again. I mean, who knows what it's going to be like at the end of this year? All the new AI products coming out. It's like, I mean, I've built 3 apps myself in the last month, right? Not really production ready, but just playing around with some of this code and things, and seeing what's possible is changing as well. And actually, a change in the way of work in China, there's a lot of the cities are offering like up to $1 million if you have an AI company, even if you're a one person founder. They're trying to get the talent in. So $1 million could include money. It could include tokens for using the AI, a server space, apartment, all this sort of stuff. But for a one person company. So things are changing, how we're working as well. I don't believe vibe coding is going to change too much. You still have to be technical a little bit, I think. But again, I'm not super super expert there, but I mean, I built a couple of things that work quite well for what they're supposed to do. So things are really changing, you know, and I think we have to embrace that. But when you are, here's a way to think, right? Traditionally, so if you're in your over 40s or 50s, go to school, do really well in your exams, go to university, get a good job, keep that job, maybe move two or three times, right? So you have a bit of a portfolio career. Now people are saying, well, why should I go to university? I can build this and maybe do that. Or I'll move jobs every couple of years, or even every couple of months. So when I used to run companies here, I used to be very involved in the hiring process and interviewing people. And if you look like 15, 20 years ago, the average change on a resume was 3 years. So they worked 3 years and then moved. And then you get a higher salary, right? And then I noticed it started changing to like 2 years, and then a year. And it's now, when I talk to coaching clients, younger people are staying 2, 3 months, 4 months. This is in China, and they're moving because they don't like the working hours, though they might get paid more, right? So yeah, there's a huge demographic shift globally in how things are changing. It's fascinating to be in, but you can see the stress that people have. And it does change the way people communicate.
Yeah, I think what we notice also here in Europe, and I'm not so experienced like you in Asia or worldwide, but what we notice here, especially in Germany, is more or less the same that yeah, the younger generation are, I think they don't want to have a work-life balance. They want to have a life-work balance, which means first life, then work, and this is exactly what you are saying. And yeah, this is really interesting, and I agree what you are saying. Why should I go to university? I can get all the knowledge out of the internet using yeah, ChatGPT or any other AI tool what we have now in our times. But yeah, that's really interesting on the one side, but worrying on the other side because yeah, how companies will keep up if they yeah have to change every 6 months their employees and start again. That's interesting. But what I really want to know is we have a Gen Z here. Maybe we can ask her about her view on this. I think this is also very interesting to the listeners.
Yeah, I
So, do you
think
agree with what we're saying, Rebecca, or with these two old guys that know what they're talking
I
about?
do think that my generation thinks very differently about the work-life balance. And I think it's first of all because of, all the new things that are coming up. Everything is changing so quickly. And I think that we also don't really have the stability that you had because back then, not everything was changing so quickly. And there were new things coming up like every month or every other week, like you also said. And I think we're also kind of going with the flow, I want to say. We're like searching for change. We don't want to stick in one place for too long. And I think I do understand that it's difficult for companies when their employees leave after like a few months or so. But on the other hand, I'm thinking if that person finds another company where they get paid more or they have more flexible work hours or anything and the opportunities there are better, why not take it? Like, why stay in a company that doesn't serve you and that doesn't go with how you want to live, because then I think you're just going to be unhappy. And if you stay there longer, nothing's going to change. So you need to take the leap and just go somewhere else. And I think like it's also more important to live than to work. And I understand why people only work from 9 to 5 if it's in the contract, because why should I work if I'm not getting paid for it? So I do understand that the older generations like took like overtime and then they had like, they worked more than what was in their contract. And I understand that. But on the other hand, I'm thinking like, why are you working if you're not getting paid? Like the company is not going to watch out for you. We can see that in the world. They're just going to lay you off. They don't care about you at the end of the day. So why work for a thing that doesn't look after you either? It's just like, doesn't make sense to me.
You're just a number on a spreadsheet at the end of the day. You know, I've seen people here recently getting laid off after 20 years, just recently. Yeah, and they're like their whole career has been at one company, and they're just laid off. And then, like, you're in your 50s. It's very hard to find a job in China. Very, very hard. Very, very hard. Right? Unless you have the yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying, Rebecca. And then the. You know, the flip side is you can't always get everything done 9 to 5, and you do sometimes have to do a bit more. And I think that's just always been the expectation. You know, when as we were growing up, you know, hard work is a virtue. It's a good thing. But yeah, I mean, I see we're trying to free our time up now. We're trying to have that life work balance, as you said, Gerhard. But the reality is, I think if you keep jumping jobs every few months, people are going to stop hiring you. That's the thing, because it takes at least 2 months to onboard someone, you know, to get
Minimum.
used to everything, especially the bigger companies, right? And then you've got just the cost of it. I mean, it costs so much more money to replace someone than to retain someone. I mean, there's advantages, disadvantages to everything, but you know, who was it? So the head of Anthropic, who they did Claude a few months ago, he said, "Don't go to university unless you go to Stanford, right? If you're doing AI." He said, "If you're 16 now and you know what you're doing, we'll hire you. So don't go to university unless it's Stanford particularly." And then was what I can't remember who it was. It was another. It wasn't Peter Thiel, but it was someone of that level was saying, well, they asked someone, "Should you save for university now? Should I save for my child's university?" So in 15 years, will we have universities when you can get everything, you can get all the knowledge online? You know? So I mean, these are all predictions, right? Who knows? But you know, my prediction in seeing these sort of things is people with soft skills, with communication skills, they'll be the people that succeed. Because you're still gonna have a lot of remote work, I think. I think there's going to be a lot of it still. And I see this with people that I coach, and they're with remote teams and the project managers. So they don't have actual real influence, real authority. They have influence. And it's such a struggle to, and the different time zones. And it's just such a struggle to actually bring people together and communicate. And I won't name the company, but one of the biggest tech companies in the world, I've been coaching them, some of their people for a few years. And in one of their countries, which again I won't say, they said there's no team spirit. Every meeting is with video off. Every single meeting, even people in the same office, it's just off. Right? So it just feels like you're talking to a blank screen. And there's so many meetings, right? So the communication is not effective. And I think that's just going to get worse, right? There's going to be more and more tools. You know, you have Slack. I don't know if you've used Slack. You know, you're typing to each other, and you're in 20, 30 channels, and there's all these different meetings coming through. You know, I always try to have, if someone wants to have a call, I always try to have a video call. Because sometimes it's not possible, right? But I try to have a video call, and you can make a connection, and you can read each other's body language. You know, such a huge portion of communication is body language. Because we had body language before we had speech. Right, and it's, you know, a smile is universally a smile, you know, and an angry face is universally an angry face. You know, of course, different gestures and different things, slight different meanings, different cultures. But I strongly believe that people with the soft skills of communication will be the and creative thinking as well, and creative problem solving. Those will be sort of the leaders of the more successful people in the future. And that's me personally. I mean, what do you guys think?
That's a very interesting part because I think I have the same opinion on that because I think we should leading humans and not numbers, and this is still the case in a lot of companies. And I think one of the soft skills I think is very important also in the future is empathy, because on the end of the day we are humans and we need to you said it, communicate to each other. We need to understand each other. We need to listen to each other. what is really said, and what your a fair statement from your end is. How should you see another person if you have a black screen? And the body language is a lot of communication, which in my point of view, I see this also in the trainings I do. You need to see the person, and you need to understand to make a real connection. Otherwise, it is not, it's not possible to connect to each other, because if you have a black screen, you don't know you're talking to a maybe a woman, a man. I don't know, because you can't, I can't see you. What is ongoing? Maybe the person is, I don't know, doing something else and don't listen to the
Well,
conversation.
they're working. They're doing their emails or the online shopping while you're in a meeting, you know?
Correct. And this is, I think, a big change. Maybe especially in this area where I live, where we live, they don't think about it, because we are more or less in a landscape area where a lot of farming is still ongoing. But if you have the speed of China, for example, they sometimes they don't believe that it is coming, but it will come, because it is the future. Rebecca, what's your opinion on that?
I think first of all that human interaction is gonna become more important, despite having so many AI programs and whatnot, because for example, on social media, I see a lot of people rejecting AI, because, for example, it steals from artists and it doesn't think itself. It just like produces something, and sometimes it also talks about something that doesn't actually really exist. And there are a lot of problems with AI, and I think because of that, maybe especially younger people are gonna go back to communicating in person. And just I also know that communication in person is also very important, because if you just talk to people on the screen or like to a black box, I think it also really does take a toll on your mental health, and we saw that in COVID that it also didn't work out. And what you said about the universities, that someone said that they are not going to be there in like 15 years or something. Personally, I cannot really imagine that. I do know that there's a lot of stuff online where you can learn from, but I think like having an education and having like the certificate is still way more important than just taking a course online. And also a lot of more work goes into a degree than just doing something online. And if you're in university, you're also talking to people. There's communication. And I think also university is a good place to communicate with people. And I see that it's getting more and more important. People are searching for a connection. So I do think soft skills like communicating properly and listening and having conversations is also going to be very, very important in the future.
Terence, I
Can
wanted to.
I
Yeah,
go
sorry.
ahead? Go ahead,
No, go
Gareth,
ahead. No
please.
problem. Yep.
No, I was
No,
going
I
to
want.
say it's no, I agree with what Rebecca's saying. It's I mean, we're trying to predict a lot of stuff, but it's the human interaction is going to become more and more important. And yeah, I think there will be people that do reject AI going forward as well. I think there will be. I mean, there's always going to be people that are late adopters, but I think there will be people. I think there'll be division in the future. I really do, because we still have a desire to work, and we still have a desire to be productive as humans, right? And to feel like a worth. And I'm not saying work is all of your worth at all. I'm not saying that, but what do you do with your time? With such a big population, what do we do? Does that mean then crime goes up? Does that mean civil unrest goes up? I mean, this is a very big picture type of thing, but I think if we can keep the communication going, we can keep the world going. That's what I think, because we just don't communicate enough. We just don't, you know. And we're social animals, social creatures, and we need to communicate with each other.
I want to jump on one specific topic, Terence, and it is about your I think you developed a training program for, I think, younger people, teens, and it is about, I think, three, parts of it is one is communication. I think the other one was self-awareness. And the third one was resilience, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm a big fan of resilience also, which means tell us a bit more, what is the program about? And what people can learn through your program. And if you see this as a future skills are also for the younger generations then.
It's well, the program's called Life Skills 101, which comes from American universities. 101 is the first thing that you learn, right? Then 102, 103, etc. But it was developed with from working with international schools here in China. And so I do a lot of training for senior leadership teams, workshops, cross-culture, etc. And then just from being in China for such for a long time and working with seeing the parents as well, there's a big communication gap. And then we see it everywhere actually. But a big thing that I see here is iPad parenting. Right. So I guarantee you go to any restaurant here and there'll be a kid there with an iPad with no headphones on. Right. And the parents will be on their phones. iPad will be blasting out, don't care about affecting anybody else in the restaurant. And that's how the kid is being, instead of reading to the child or playing with the child, iPad generation, right? And there's so much coming out now saying don't show kids screens for the first 2 to 3 years of their lives. We were back in Kazakhstan last month, and my wife went to just get a checkup, and went to see this doctor, trained teach her how to sort of communicate a little bit. When she was there, three separate doctors said to her, please keep screens away until he's 2 years old. Three doctors in one day. She went around doing this sort of this different check. I was like, wow. And that's the communication piece is going away. But it was before I even knew this thing about screens. I was saying, thinking, well, what are you doing? You're sitting there, you're just looking at your phone. So the communication piece was gone. You also have here tons of pressure academically on kids, tons of pressure. Because your academic achievement is a big part of who you are. Certificate means everything in China, Rebecca. So I'm an ICF PCC, right? I really believe in ICF, right? The ethics, etc. But I never joined and I never did the exam because I thought I didn't need it, right? And a few years ago, I already had enough hours, etc. So many clients were saying to me, if you have ICF PCC, we can give you some business. So I went and did the exam. It was like 4 hours. Sitting in a room, you couldn't go out, couldn't have your phone in there. I passed it, you get the results on the same day. So I posted it on WeChat, right? So for any listeners who don't know what WeChat is, it's a super app, right? So everything's run on WeChat here. I posted it, and within 2 days, I had four new corporate clients because I had the certificate,
Batch.
right? I totally, I've always followed the ICF code of ethics, etc., even before I went and did the exam. So yeah, I was just like, well, do I need it? And then, yes, you do need you do need the certificate, right? So yeah, back to the program, and it was designed, to help people communicate a little bit differently, and also like with COVID. I mean, COVID was brutal here, absolutely brutal. I mean, we had a 3 day lockdown in Shanghai that lasted 4 months, I think. And I personally lost 5 or 6 kg just for not having any food. There was no food. So we won't go too much into that. But I was started working with really started working with the international schools there doing resilience workshops for the teachers. So a lot of the teachers had come in first time in China. First time overseas, and then they're locked in a one bedroom apartment on their own, right? Without a balcony, things like this. So it came from that. And then sort of extending that out to the kids and their parents. So self-awareness, like because of the one child policy here, like with one child, the whole family sort of dotes on the child, gives them what they want, and the whole family's involved. And that can lead to maybe once you're 18 and you go to live over, go to university overseas, maybe you don't even know how to do your laundry, right? How do you then go and live alone? So it's developed to And again, there's nothing right or wrong here. It's a cultural phenomenon. And the life skills program is around communication both ways, parents and kids, resilience, emotional intelligence, self-confidence. Right? How do you actually go and talk to people? Because that's what you have to do. And if you've grown up in a generation where you are, the opportunities for communication are mostly online, how do you even learn to read someone's body language? Look, I mean, you can see we're all sitting at various angles here, right? There's different levels of, right? And when we do like online training for presentation skills and things, we're saying in your meeting, sit like this so people can. I don't know if people can sit, will be able to see me, but show the top to your waist, your head to your waist, so people can see your gestures and things. You know? So it's around that. The resilience is a big piece because also, are you going to have a job after university now? That's the thing. Can you buy a house? These sort of things. Do you even want to buy a house? Right? Not every culture buys houses, right? I think in Germany, people do they traditionally don't buy too much? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, I think it depends on the areas, but in the
Yeah.
big cities, I think they don't buy houses because it's too expensive, but especially more or less in the countryside where we live, everybody has his own house. He starts building with 25 and he dies there with 70 or 80 years old.
So it's different, right? And now it's like some people are saying, just rent your whole life. Don't buy. Don't get a mortgage because you'll end up, this is the thing. The world is changing so fast. What do I do? I've been told all my life to be academic, go and do this academically, but we have people here. So the food delivery industry is enormous here, right? So a lot of people, they do the food delivery. It's not very high pay. It's not very safe. You're under a lot of pressure. But there's people with PhDs, there's people with MBAs doing this delivery riding job now for maybe £1,000 a month, right? Because they can't get jobs elsewhere and they need to provide for their family. So you've gone and done all of that, and then suddenly there's no work. So this is the big thing. That's what life skills is about. It's designed for teens, but it comes from like resilience, my resilience practice. It comes from my executive coaching. It comes from public speaking and confidence. So it's bringing all these things in, but to help teens and parents sort of try and make sort of sense of things. So it's aimed at like 13 to 18 to 19 year olds, depending on where they're from. And a lot of kids want to go and study abroad. You've got to be prepared for that. How do you go and communicate with someone if you're from an indirect culture? How do you go and communicate in a direct culture? This is the thing because our culture is such a part of us. It never goes, even if you do adapt. Your culture is part of you, and it can really give us a lot of biases, unconscious bias, stereotypes, even when we go overseas. And I see that with people from certain countries that go overseas and they think they're in their own country still. And then it's like, well, why do people do this and not this? Well, you're not in your own country anymore. You've got to be the one to adapt. You're the guest. That's what you have to think about. And it's giving people these skills to understand that, be aware. I mean, you can't really appreciate it till you go and live somewhere or try something. I mean, you can, right? You can have all the training in the world until you go and experience it. But that's essentially what it's about, Gerhard. And the resilience and the self-confidence and emotional intelligence are the cornerstones of the program. And it's quite successful here. And we're rolling it out in Kazakhstan now as well. Very, very young population there. Most people are trilingual, like English, Russian, Kazakh. Very good level of education, more and more people want to go overseas, but it's an indirect culture. So how do we communicate? And I would say that every teen and every culture on the planet has the same challenges.
I agree.
Every single person, right? We just weren't aware of it when we were growing up because we didn't have the social media, right? We didn't know that everyone has the same problem, right? And that's the thing. And you're bombarded on Instagram and TikTok and all these like, I want to be like this person, fear of missing out. It's a huge challenge. And if I don't have this, then I don't fit in, which we all had. I remember growing up, it was like, If you didn't have a certain tracksuit, like a sports suit, then you weren't cool. And then if you didn't have the sneakers or sports shoes, you weren't cool. I mean, it's still like that now, but and then the phones came out. If you didn't have this phone, you're not cool. And it's like, Rebecca, when you get to my age, I have no brands on anything. I just buy a comfortable t-shirt, so I don't care anymore. It's like, but you do care when you're growing up. And it's, I think we have to be able to give whatever generation coming up the tools to be resilient and the tools to have confidence in themselves. And adults too. I know plenty of people, very high level people, that don't have confidence. CEOs and general managers that don't, they have the outward appearance for work, but deep down, that they don't really have it. So it's trying to help people understand, it's okay to be yourself. It's also okay to not be okay sometimes. But let's try and talk about it and let's try and communicate.
Wow. That's a lot, but thank you for that. Kind of want to come to an end here. Is there anything you would like to say at the end, like any tips for the people out there or anything that's really important to you, also regarding communication or anything? Please go ahead and then, tell us about it.
So try not to, try and keep an open mind in your life, right? Because we, as I just mentioned, we do have these unconscious biases. And when we're communicating, when we're talking to people, these biases are trying to help us bring up, sort of make sense of all this information that's coming at us, make sense of the world, right? And I just want people to keep in mind, we don't see the world as it is. We don't see the world as we think we see it. We see the world as we are. And if we can be a bit more open-minded and be a bit more culturally aware and more aware of our communication, I think we can just make better lives for ourselves. We're not going to solve every problem. It's not magic, but if we talk openly, if we talk to each other with respect, and we have face-to-face meetings, whether it's online or interface, we will solve problems quicker rather than 5 million emails or 5 million Slack messages, right? So I would just say, be aware of differences, appreciate differences, and adapt where you can. That's what I would say on communication.
That's a perfect ending, I would say. It's really good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bad, do you want to say your last impressions?
I couldn't agree more what Terence was saying. I think that the final message on my end or from my side is trying to step in the other person's shoes. I think this is always a little bit what empathy, active listening, communicating is about, and I think this gets more and more important. I think that people really need this, and we are here to support them.
Exactly.
Okay,
Okay,
thank
well,
you.
thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
I just wanted to say this one quote that you said, if we keep communication going, we keep the world going. I think it's an amazing quote, and I just wanted to say that. And I thought the dialogue with you was very productive, and I love that we talked to each other and we also said our opinions. So it was a really, really good conversation with you. So thank you for that.
My
And for the
pleasure.
listeners, as always, if you have any questions or if you want to tell us any impressions of this episode, please always contact us. And that's it then for this episode. Thank you again so
Thank
much,
you so
Terry.
much. Enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ciao.
Okay.
Bye.